tropical storm Barry. The storm headed toward Louisiana, affecting oil production in the Gulf of Mexico. Some drillers shutting down rigs.
The market doesn't seem to be internalizing these recession fears. It seems to me like the market feels like it's getting a freebie here.
There are no promises, but there is a strong hint of a rate cut in the testimony. Chairman Powell will tell House members that many of his colleagues saw the case for somewhat more accommodative monetary policy at their June 19th meeting and, quote, since then, based on incoming data and other developments, it appears that uncertainties around trade tensions and concerns about the strength of the global economy continue to weigh on the U.S. economic outlook.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Well, the Fed chairman was on Capitol Hill this week confirming a rate cut is coming at the end of this month. It's no longer a question of if, but now it's a question of how much. Markets seem to love the message as all major indexes are hitting new highs at the end of this week, and oil prices rising to over $60 a barrel as Hurricane Barry hits the Gulf, as many oil platforms are being evacuated. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's Financial Sense News Hour. Coming up, Basil Chapman is our technician this week. He believes this bull market has further to run, but he thinks in the short term a correction is possible. Greg Weldon will be joining me later on in the program as we discuss the approaching crisis in Europe and what this means for the dollar and gold. And listen to what he has to say about what could happen to gold. We've been having several on the program that are very bullish on gold. How high will it go? And in the big picture, will rate cuts prevent another recession and bear market as the New York Fed's recession indicator rises to 30, giving a 1 in 3 chance we could be facing a recession in the next 12 months? All of that and Ryan Poplava's wrap-up coming up on today's program.
I hope our listeners are enjoying the summer so far, and I really can't complain in sunny San Diego, where the temperatures have only just started to climb above 80, and the beaches are starting to get all packed with a bunch of Arizona families all enjoying the sun and surf. So it's just been great. I hope anybody listening that you and yours are able to soak in that kind of summer sun right now and are having some little R&R as well. Well, there's probably a lot more going on at the beach than there is in the market these days. The big events this week were Powell's testimony on Capitol Hill Tuesday, as well as Wednesday. And yeah, that's pretty much it. But seriously, I think the price action itself was the big news on Thursday. The S&P closed above 3,000, and this week the Dow closed above 27,000. You know, big whole numbers like that are psychological levels that in themselves really are just meaningless, but can often act as resistance or support just because of the weight in the eyes of investors. But sprinkle in some downgrades on a few popular names this week. Trump's administration pulling the plug on drug rebates from government plans. And you have a few side stories that influence some select sectors or select individual securities. So let's focus on the main event this week, which was the Fed Chair Jay Powell's testimony. You know, the bulk of the reaction happened on Tuesday, the first meeting day, and based on his opening remarks, which focused on a lot of attention on a weak global economy, which is, you know, based on trade and manufacturing, which has been declining, trade tensions remaining, and a problem with inflation remaining well below their 2% target. He said all of those things are weighing on the U.S. economic outlook. And by focusing on all of those negatives, really, and not, and maybe just a nod or a hat tilt to the jobs market, it seemed to reaffirm to investors in their eyes that a rate cut at the end of the month is very, very likely, and for at least 25 basis points. I also think nobody thinks the Fed will stop with only one cut, and this is just the first in a few or many moves. And then Trump, you know, if we look at back in December and October, November, Trump had accused the Fed of keeping credit too tight. And that may very well be the case looking at the continued inversion of the yield curve. But you know, what I find most interesting from this debate on, you know, whether the Fed will or won't they go, or, you know, how much is it going to be? If you look at the Fed fund futures, which has a pretty high predictability of predicting these types of things, we saw a significant favor towards a quarter point after the jobs report. But after Powell's speeches this week, the probability of two cuts has gone up. So last week it was around 5% chance, went up to around 24% chance this Friday. That's a decent shift, but probably not enough. Usually we see the Fed fund futures about 90% before a move, and the predictions are typically spot on when you get up there because the Fed has tried to be so transparent before it makes a move. Okay, enough of the Fed and rates. You get the picture, probably a quarter point cut, and probable that one cut won't help the global economy revitalize manufacturing, so we'll likely see a few more after that. I'm very interested to see what happens to the yield curve. We've begun seeing the 10-year treasury rates move up, and the S&P financial sector hit a new high year-to-date this Friday. Not an all-time high, just a year-to-date high. So the sector seems to be approving of the Fed's actions. And again, going back to that 10-year treasury, we've seen rates go from below 2% last week, real briefly, right before the jobs report, to getting right around 2.1% at the end of this week on Friday. And it's been our view that the 10-year has really moved too far, too fast, and we have ourselves reduced our allocation towards that end of the fixed income portion of our portfolios in our aggressive accounts. But earlier this week, Apple and 3M were downgraded by Rosenblatt and RBC Capital Markets, respectively. Apple's downgrade Monday seemed to have sort of a reverberating effect in addition to the psychological technical levels I mentioned previously. Those two things, the downgrades on large companies like Apple and 3M, and then again, those psychological levels, very key in kind of causing a bit of a pause and pullback in profit-taking early in the week before Jay Powell gave his testimony. I forgot to mention that Morgan Stanley had put a downgrade out on global equities, saying they think there's poor outlook for them over the next 3 months, and that also weighed on the market early in the week. Oddly, I'm not seeing a whole lot of reaction in the energy markets to continued geopolitical angst between Iran and everybody else. There was a denied attempt to hijack or maybe destroy a UK oil tanker that was protected by a UK destroyer. That was in obviously direct reciprocation for what the UK did to the Iranian oil tanker trying to reach into Syria last week. And Trump indicated more sanctions are coming for Iran. So looking at the energy market, oil has lifted off its lows in June, but seems to be hovering right around $60, kind of stalled for the past 2 weeks. And also that final thing I had mentioned, the Trump administration pulling the plug on government plans for drug rebates seem to benefit companies with pharmacy benefit management businesses like CVS and a few others, but it did hurt pharmaceuticals. We saw some pharmaceuticals, and all in all, that caused the healthcare industry to pull back on that day. But yet another good week in equities and record-setting highs for the S&P 500 and the Dow Industrials, with the Treasury markets taking a bit of a breather. I had heard early in the week or later in the week that a 30-year bond auction was weak, and that contributed to helping some of that profit-taking in Treasuries. So next week, let's talk about that. Citigroup starts earnings on Monday, and I think we're still at the point where less emphasis will be on the earnings itself, unless they're going to disappoint by a big margin, the companies that are coming up ahead. More emphasis will be on the guidance. You know, is the second half looking better? We talked about Micron last week and how that affected semiconductors. We'll talk more about earnings next week and any other catalysts that come up. You can be sure of that.
Our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense Insider. That features interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's what you missed.
Yeah, I would agree with you looking at the election calendar, certainly. I think people are pretty well aware that oftentimes these election outcomes tend to correlate pretty strongly with the direction of the economy and the equity market going into the election as to whether the incumbent remains in office or not. And so I think that Trump's going to do what he can to keep this expansion going through next November's election. And also Powell, and I'm not implying that he's politically motivated here at all. Obviously, in terms of his job, he's really reiterated that his main priority is to keep this economic expansion going. And I think one of the reasons for that is because he looks a lot at the labor force participation rates and breaks it down demographically. And if you look at the prime age participation rate, that's below the peak of the last cycle high in the mid-2000s.
Everyone wants to retire well. That's not as easy as it sounds. You need to make the right investment choices, decide when to take Social Security,
plan for taxes on your retirement income, and create a legacy for your family. To retire well, you need a roadmap to help you get there. Let Financial Sense Wealth Management help you navigate your way to retirement. We provide comprehensive, thoughtful, and personal retirement planning. Call Financial Sense Wealth Management now at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. Start your journey to retiring well today. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Markets are in record territory, both the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ hitting new records this week as positive comments come from Chairman Powell before Congress. It looks like an interest rate cut could be coming by the end of this month. What does this mean for the stock market? Joining me on the program is Basil Chapman. Basil, let's begin with the Dow Industrials. That's probably the most widely followed index next to the S&P. It's in record territory. What are your charts telling you? Where do we go from here?
Well, first, Jim, hi. Thank you very much for bringing me back. And yes, this is a very important moment. Actually, today is quite important. We landed up going to a new high today. We went to 27,072. Now, I start to look at the MACD, the moving average convergence divergence, and that is just showing that right at this moment with the Dow at all-time highs, you suddenly cross negative for the first time since you crossed positive way back from the June 3rd low. Now we've suddenly pulled back. So this is where I've said we've got to be somewhat cautious. And last week I was saying the second week of July, a lot of my indicators are indicating this is where we might start to see a rotational correction. It doesn't have to be deep, but it could actually involve some areas that have been strong and then some areas that have been weak might hold up well. And the slow stochastic went under 80% and it's at 77%. So it's saying be a little cautious right now. What I am looking at is that daily, weekly, monthly are all bumping into resistance. I suspect that we've got limited upside right now in the shorter term, but there's a chance that we're going to go chop, chop, chop and probably make lower, slightly lower lows and maybe slightly higher highs over the next 2-3 weeks. So that's kind of my thinking right now. I am wrong if the Dow closes above 27,270 in the next 3-4 days, because that really would break out to a level that says, ooh, you're going to force people into the market. So I think this is a period you've just got to be a little bit careful.
Basil, when you see something like we have the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P breaking out to new highs, but talk about the small cap stocks like the Russell. The Russell is not there. Is that creating a divergence that has any significance?
There are a couple of things that I would consider to be very important. So if you talk about the S&P, also made an all-time high, I like it when you have the coincidence of your 3 or 4 major key indices moving together to highs. This discrepancy with the small cap stocks really haven't found favor at all. That is something to note. I would also put in the transports, the IYT. I know that you also look at transports, and that the IYT is lagging badly. And if you're thinking Dow theory, you really want to see the Dow and the transports, at least one of them should be close to the highs. If one is at the highs, this is like the IWM, same thing. It's quite far away. So that's a discrepancy that you have to take note of at this particular point.
I want to talk about two other things that investors should be following. Let's talk about the dollar and gold. Recently, you saw gold break out above 1350, 1360, got up to 1400. And then also we've seen a rally in the dollar. What is that telling you? And could that have an impact on the stock charts?
So as I said a week or so ago, I was saying, I think there are going to be some trend changes coming up around this particular point, and we're going to have to make note of them. I'm putting the dollar, gold, I'm putting yields. There are really three separate entities. Sometimes they work together. But right at this particular point, the dollar at 97.08 is still holding pretty well over the weekly chart, just to show that there's a trend line that it keeps bumping into resistance at, but it also has tremendous support. And my monthly chart, I've been positive the dollar since April of 2018. It was at 90, so 88 was the low. 90 is where I got all signals to say dollar should actually represent the United States economy as an icon of the economy. It is an icon in many other ways, just as the yen was rising when we were buying Toyotas and Hondas back in the 1980s. It kind of represents the strength of a country. So I like the dollar. It's made a peak C in the monthly chart. I think the dollar is going to go at some point in the next couple of months over 98. And once it goes into 98.50, I think 100 is going to be the target. Usually you get counterpoint with the dollar moving one way and gold moving the other. There's something different here because I think that gold is still more a kind of a fear factor. It's a kind of a currency of fear for the world. So I think that's one of the reasons why gold has been doing better than silver. And so now the stocks are finally joining in gold. So gold made a high of 1442.90 on the continuous contract back on the 25th of May. Until it decisively closes, gold closes in the 1465 or higher area. I think this is a magnet for it. And until it closes below 1380, it could be stuck. But if it does close below 1380, this is just under the 1384 key support. That's the continuous contract. I think if it does that, then that's going to confirm for me that the dollar should actually start on its way to the high 98s. So that's what we're looking at. I'm looking at in terms of the relationship there.
So, Basil, if you were to sum it up, advice for our investors at this point, given what your charts are telling you, what would you be doing?
Well, the most important thing is that in the monthly charts, it looks to me like we're going to go to higher highs in 2019, probably into 2020. That's number one. Number two is within the context of investors, say this is within long-term portfolios, I just don't think that there's really nothing much else you're going to be able to put money into. So I think that this is the place to be. And maybe be a little selective if you've had really good gains. You could, if you feel a little nervous, I recommend take a little bit off and then dedicate that money to what you really like or what you've just come out of and say, you know, if this pulls back 10%, 12%, I'll put that money back again. So I'm saying I don't think this is a period for panic because the TINA is what people are talking about. There is no alternative. I think that's the case for now. It's going to stay that way for a little while longer. But my monthly charts are strong enough. If the MACD and the Dow finally crosses positive, that's going to give another boost to the market. So I'd say 1,000 points, 1,500 points, even 2,000 points to the downside over the next couple of weeks. If that happens to whatever, you know, Fed's talking one way, T-bonds at this particular point, yields are actually rallying a little bit, even though the Fed's speaking about cutting rates. So I think there's a mixed market right at this moment. Take advantage of it. If you've got good profits, take some profits off. Get ready to put that to work a little later on. There are going to be plenty of areas. And, you know, we're still waiting for what I call a Dow quartet. That's Caterpillar, IBM, DuPont, and Triple M. Usually big market leaders in major bull markets, they've been kind of morbid. So I think that they will eventually, if they start to move higher, that's going to be very important to the next phase of the move.
Okay, Basil, if our listeners would like to follow your work, tell them how they could do so.
I have a newsletter called The Opening Call. It's available at tfnn.com and at Tiger Financial News Network every day at noon Eastern Time, noon to 1 o'clock. I do a live show, a call-in show on the stock market. And it's, as I say, every market day, Monday through Friday, noon to 1 p.m. It's called the Tiger Technician's Hour.
All right, Basil, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. You too, Jim. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense Insider. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
As the U.S., you know, preps itself for this Cold War with China, it's pretty clear that the U.S. has decided to fight that Cold War on the tech battlefront. This for a simple reason. I think the U.S. can't accept to have China leapfrog the United States in some key technologies. And today, in fairness, China is leapfrogging the United States when it comes to telecoms with 5G, and it's leapfrogging the United States when it comes to artificial intelligence. So noticing this, the U.S. says, all right, enough is enough. We're picking a battle on the tech front, hence the targeting of ZTE, hence the targeting of Huawei. And one of the analogies I use in the book is indeed that empires need to control the sea lanes because that's where the valuable goods flow. Now, in the 20th century, the valuable goods flowed, moved around on boats, And so if you're the leading empire, you needed to control the Suez Canal, you needed to control the Panama Canal, and so forth. In the 21st century, the valuable goods will not be moving around by boat. They'll be moving around on telecom lines.
Well, this week, Chairman Powell is up on Capitol Hill testifying before the House and the Senate as the markets have been anticipating rate cuts coming at the end of the month. If they do, what does it imply about the economy, the markets, and what lies ahead? Joining me from Weldon Live is Greg Weldon. Greg, let's begin with the Fed. Fed Chairman Powell is testifying before the House. And the market is anticipating, at least it was until unemployment figures last Friday, aggressive rate cuts coming at the end of the month. So a couple questions. Do they cut? Number two, are they going to be aggressive? And number three, what happens if they don't cut?
Yes, no, and look out below. I think if you what you're really looking at is one of the biggest dichotomies that we've seen in a long time. Between the expectations of the market, the pricing of the Fed funds futures and the Treasury market versus what the Fed is telling us and what the Fed is projecting in their own macro forecasts. This has been something that has been pretty much in effect and dominant since the taper went to tap out in QE, August of 2014. The Fed projected very steep rate cuts where they would have been at 375 by 2017. If you took what they said in 2014 for face value, the market never believed that. So the market was always, you know, depricing the tightness that the Fed was projecting, if you will. Now that has flipped to where the, you know, the market's actually pricing in rate cuts that the Fed is not projecting. Now, the history is the markets have been right. And the history is that the Fed has other things than just kind of being right in their forward look. As it has, how does that forward look manage expectations and where they are now? The Fed has been masterful at like puppeteering the market. I wrote a piece today called When the Music Plays the Band. And if you remember Grateful Dead, okay, it's an old song, you know, the music never stops. It talks about the music playing the band. In other words, the band is the Fed. All right. But right now, and the music is the markets and the macro situation. And right now, the music is playing the band because the music is pricing in rate cuts. And what's interesting about that, to get to your second, the second point of your question, is that if another dichotomy in that the U.S. economic situation is not so dire as to mandate the Fed be cutting rates right here. The kind of the excuse and the pressure point is inflation, okay, because inflation has fallen and the Fed has cut their inflation forecast, which suggests if they want to stay neutral, which is what they said they wanted to do when they started raising rates, they should be cutting rates. So that's number one. Number two, you have a situation in Europe, Jim, that is dire, that does mandate rate cuts. And rate cuts that, frankly, the ECB can't deliver. The forward deposit rate futures in Europe have priced in 20 basis points of rate cuts from the ECB by the end of the year. Their official deposit rate is minus 40 basis points. That means minus 60. And that's a big yawn. Who cares? Why? Because you've gone from having GDP in Germany, you know, 2.7, 2.8, to where now, if you look at PMIs or the EU Commission survey results from the end of June, there's very tight correlations with industrial production and GDP. And it's projecting them falling into negative territory in the case of GDP, potentially as deep as 2 to 3% negative nominally in Germany. That's a big problem. And the numbers have come off very rapidly. So when the ECB had a chance to hike rates last year, they didn't do it. And now, you know, for lack of a better phrase, excuse my language, they're screwed. So what are they going to do? Well, we can talk more about what they are talking about doing behind the scenes because it is dramatic to the max. And it is QE on steroids that will have a very big impact on a lot of the markets. But sticking with the Fed, if the ECB is not perceived as being so aggressive as they might be, And when you take into account the Bank of Japan, the Swiss National Bank, the Riksbank, and even to a lesser degree, you know, the Australian and Canadian central banks, in terms of not having a lot of leeway with policy, that puts the Fed on the hot seat. And the crux of all this becomes the dollar, Jim, because if the dollar breaks out because the Fed is maybe a little too tight or not dovish enough here in the right time frame as projected by the markets, or as kind of maybe mandated by the global situation, that would be a problem for them. One of the other things I would bring into the Fed is not just Powell, but in the last 60 days, you've had five different regional Fed presidents on the speaking circuit saying the same exact words. That doesn't happen unless it's orchestrated. And those words are, they are concerned about the credibility of their inflation target. Well, what happens to the credibility of their inflation target if the dollar breaks out and commodities come under pressure, as the base metals are threatening to do right here, as emerging markets start to get hit? That would be a big problem. So the Fed's going to be in play in here somehow. The big question is, how does it all reconcile with the expectations? Can they meet the timeline? Can they be aggressive enough? There's no one, the market is not pricing in a July cut. Okay. And Powell just said, by the end of this month, we'll have more information. Well, by the end of July, the July meeting's passed. They're off in August, and the Fed funds futures was actually pricing in 50 basis points of cuts by September. Now, that would imply a cut while they're on vacation in August of 25 and a 25 cut in September, or a 50 basis point cut in September. Neither one of those things was going to happen, Jim. So the fear here is that the Fed is not going to deliver what the market is demanding here, and that could cause some turbulence. And that, in turn, might be the catalyst that brings the Fed, you know, to where the market wants them to be.
You bring up an interesting question, because the market was last year, if we take September all the way to December, when the Fed was very hawkish in their pronouncements, Powell's speech, his press conferences, and the market was saying, you're too tight, you're too tight. And they persisted on their hawkishness until things began to unravel in the fourth quarter. And voila, in the first couple of weeks of January, they pivot, do a 180, and all of a sudden they're back into, oh my goodness, we may have to cut and we're not going to raise this year. So could the Fed be making another mistake? On the day you and I are speaking, the S&P 500 is heading towards 3,000. So the market, as you're saying, is playing the Fed, saying, we're expecting a cut. What could happen if they basically don't? And as you say, they go on recess in August, which means we have to wait to September. That could be turbulent.
Yeah, it could be. And that brings up a whole another kind of interesting point around this, because, too, if you kind of do step back, I mean, I wrote the piece in late November called A Bridge Too Far, in which I said the Fed's going to hike again in December, and it's going to be too much. It's going to be one step too far. And what happened because of that is it was very specific. It happened quickly, and it had a big impact in the first quarter in terms of the consumer, because it was the consumer that got hit. You had the largest back-to-back monthly decline ever in online shopping in January and February. All right, the consumer was on the mat so fast. Why? Because the monthly nut of the consumer, the amount that the consumer pays in interest cost every month, ballooned. And it went to a record high of $350 billion in December on the back of that rate cut into January, right? And it's pretty much staying there right now. Well, at some point, that begins to crowd out discretionary spending. When you get a $350 billion interest expense every month against a $500 billion retail sales total, there's a problem somewhere there in the math. And you got into that murky area to me, and that was the risk that the Fed took by hiking one more time, that they would be beyond just neutral or a little bit, that they would actually be tight. And that had its impact on the consumer. You saw it in the first quarter. And what happens? They pivot because of the consumer and because the market reflected that to some degree too. But it was really about the consumer numbers to me. And what's happened since? You've seen a boom in consumer credit growth. You went in the kind of the QE period, you had 39 months in a row where consumer credit, as measured by the Fed, increased on a 12-month basis, rolling 12-month basis, by $200 billion a month or more, you know, every month or more. You went now 22 months on the back end of that, which peaked like into this trough we're talking about off the December rate hike. Since then, you're back to $200 billion for the last 2 months running. These are big numbers. In that vein, you've kind of, you know, had the consumer all of a sudden borrow a lot more money, but it's kind of predicated on lower rates. And what's interesting, Jim, this is where it gets to the crux of the matter, is borrowing rates haven't fallen at all outside of the mortgage sector. So they've actually made new highs. Credit card numbers just released this week, new highs in the interest cost. Okay. So whatever degree the banks are looking at maybe expanding their margins, maybe that's good for banks. You want to hold bank shares. The banks are not breaking out here. But there's so many tangent conversations to be had off of this and the Fed and the what ifs and whys And, you know, again, the other one to me, the biggest one is the dollar, because if the what had started to kind of crack the dollar was the thought that the Fed was finally going to come to the point where they actually were cutting rates, that would start to cause the interest rate differentials with Europe to narrow a little bit. And instead, what happened? They didn't do that. Okay. And Europe has all but collapsed. And you have now, I mean, our biggest trade on the books right now is long the Italian bond futures. I mean, it's an explosive trade. I mean, you've had, you know, a 70 basis point decline in the 10-year yield there. I mean, so the rate differentials have made a dramatic shift back in favor of the dollar. And this is the big point. So the mistake here would be, theoretically, that the dollar could really ruin the party. Okay. But on the other hand, like you say, this is like the horse go before the cart and the whole dynamic around, you know, the chicken and the egg and all these questions around. If the stock market's making new highs, where's the case for the Fed to cut rates? But if they don't cut rates, the stock market will not stay at record highs for long. And in fact, the downside could be huge, because you've had one of the biggest six-month, month-end to month-end increases. You've had the biggest since 2012, bigger than Q3, okay, QE3, bigger than tax cuts, based on the Fed shifting their bias and doing nothing. If you don't meet those expectations, the stock market has a quick 15% haircut and significantly more downside, you know, depending on how long it takes the Fed to respond.
You know, the other question I want to bring up is, we're in a presidential election cycle. We had the tax stimulus that was put into effect. That's kind of wearing itself off. I don't see Congress doing anything in the way of stimulus that would help the president going into the election in November. So, Greg, about the only kind of stimulus that you would have for this economy would be the Fed. I mean, they're the only game in town. I don't see it coming from Congress, and I don't know what the president can do with executive orders. So what does this mean for the economy?
Well, I mean, again, it's, you know, the U.S. economy is rolling over, and it's, you know, but it's lagging because other economies are rolling over faster. And this is the problem. The other, you know, these other central banks don't have room to move. So I think that with all this focus on the Fed, you know, really more of this focus should be on Europe, because Europe is in this situation already. The Fed, you know, the Fed really isn't. I mean, you have positive GDP, you have job growth. Even though wage growth has slowed, it's still 2.8. I mean, think about 3 years ago, you would have been really, you know, celebrating 2.8% average weekly earnings growth on a year-over-year basis. It's down 80 basis points. It's slowing. It's rolled over. It's peaked. These are all problems in the future, but it's still 2.8% versus what you see in Europe. Even Japan now showing signs. The bank lending numbers the other night out of Japan were really bad. And we've been watching, is there going to be anything coming out of Japan? And boom, there it is. You have these issues. You still have a housing issue in Canada. You still have the endgame effects of a housing bubble pricked in Australia. So at least they have some measures to move. The UK numbers from last week were equally bad, implying that the BOE may be back in play. So this is not just about the Fed, even though it's all about the Fed. And, you know, I know it sounds weird, but I know you know what I mean. I think the place to really keep an eye right here is Europe, because I think there is the potential for the ECB to, you know, talk about the Super Mario and pulling a rabbit out of his hat. In this case, he may have to pull something else out of somewhere else, but it will do the trick if it is what is being discussed, which is a two-tiered rate system that would basically give the money to banks where they could pay, listen, where the banks in Europe could pay consumers and businesses to borrow more money. It could be the most bullish thing we've seen for gold in 35 years. I mean, really, what potentially could happen in Europe.
You're talking basically almost helicopter drops, because what else are they going to do? Buying bonds isn't going to do it, so they're going to have to do something to get money in the economy. Speaking of gold, it's been holding firm roughly around 1400. It broke out above that 1350 level. What's your take on gold here, and where do you think it might be heading?
You know, gold's performance has been stellar because it hasn't cracked. I mean, you know, we kind of even go back to a conversation we had the, you know, last time I was on your show, you know, that gold just sticking around 1260 was phenomenal performance because the dollar was pushing new highs above 98. And in that sense, the correlation would have suggested gold was closer to 1100 to 1050. And it wasn't. That was stellar performance. You're seeing the same exact thing here. It's holding its breakouts, despite the fact that the dollar's right back pressing against 98. And if you look at the trade weighted dollar, it's even stronger. So I think gold's performance is phenomenal because the dollar will be in play at some point in time. I am very much convinced of that. You know, the question is the timing. The question is, do you get some kind of event where it takes a stock market crunch here in the U.S. to bring the Fed back into play? And that could be negative for gold. If the dollar breaks out and becomes a dollar debt issue that causes the Fed to have to come back into play, you know, and you get a little swoon in commodities, that could be a negative for gold. Gold has its risks. But when I look at the bigger picture and when I look about what you just said, you just nailed it. Because it's all about Europe, Jim. And it's all about they have some real problems. And just so little in terms of solutions and even in terms of applications of a Band-Aid to a bleeding jugular. Okay, so they need to come up with something way more creative, inventive, new, and effective. And this whole two-tiered system would do the trick, Jim. And this thing is potentially mind-blowing in what they could do here with the LTRO program and actually raise deposit rates to start paying depositors. Because think about what negative rates really do. If you're going to say, look, first of all, the message it sends, the BIS did a great paper on this recently about forward guidance and how it can work against you. And in the case of having negative bond yields, it works against you. It's telling the public that the situation is so bad, we feel need to have negative interest rates. And what happens on that? It's a loop, right? So now the consumer is feeling so unsafe that he's willing to pay governments to hold his money. That sucks money right out of the economy. It's so counterproductive. It's ridiculous. And in the case of what they're proposing to maybe do would be lift deposit rates so you can pay depositors and you can get some income, fixed income. Let's not forget that's the phrase, fixed income going. And at the same time, feed the banks with cheaper, even cheaper, lower negative rates on the LTRO. Say you went to a 2% deposit rate and a negative 2% borrowing rate for the banks. And the banks would be facilitated to the point where they could make consumer and business loans with negative interest rates. Bond yields would sky, your short rates would skyrocket. Stocks would go kind of crazy. It would be QE on steroids to the max. It would be the nuclear option in terms of monetary Armageddon in the EU. And I don't see any other way out for them. I'm saying this is the right thing to do. I mean, you know, those discussions passed us by in 1990. What's the right thing to do? How to fix this? This isn't about fixing. It's about pain avoidance. And you have a ton of pain headed right at you in Europe if they don't do something dramatic. And they are talking about this exact setup in the background. And this could become reality. And if it does, gold will take off no matter what the dollar's doing.
All I can say at this point, fasten your seatbelts, folks. It's going to be an interesting summer. Craig, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out all of the things that you do at Weldon Live, tell them how they could do so.
Sure, Jim. We offer a free trial to our daily Weldon Live service, which covers all the markets globally, has specific trading recommendations in all these sectors. We pretty much play in all the markets. I would like to also just mention that we, you know, as a result of our gold bootcamp that we recently did, and it's a gold investor bootcamp, which is actually available for sale on our website. It's 5 hours, 5 videos, you know, 5 lessons, all me, over 500 pages of text about all the different ways to invest in gold, the philosophies around it, the history of it, where we could go, what's the fundamental situation relative to paper. And I mean, man, there's a ton of stuff in there. We held nothing back. It was supposed to be a book. It was kind of my publisher was busting my chops for the last couple of years. You know, gold's coming. We need another book. And I started to put together the material for the book and said, this makes a great boot camp. I need to take this directly to the people. So that's there. And as a result of that, because of demand off the boot camp, we are working on and hoping to debut soon, like yesterday, gold-guru.com. And it's going to be a much, much less expensive service for the gold bugs, you know, for gold investors. We're going to do stocks, ETFs, the, you know, futures, with all the macro backdrop just on the metals. And remember, I used to do the metal monitor a long time ago. It used to be one of the products we sold. So it's kind of going back to basics for me. And it's going to be a very, very affordable, I think it's like $60 a month, 3 times a week, 5 to 8 minute video PDF chart package type of deal. So we're very excited to get this out there so we can help broader audience who kind of, you know, not only really survive, but to thrive in the environment that's coming next. Like you said, this is going to be one heck of a 6 to 18 months we got facing us, Jim. It's really going to be fascinating and wild and a lot of opportunities here to take advantage of.
All right, Greg, well, as always, thanks for joining us on the program. You take care, my friend. We'll talk to you again in the future.
Yeah, you too, Jim.
Investors are enjoying a nice start to the second half of the year. All three major averages are now in record territory at the time of this recording. But as our technician, Basil Chapman, states this week, we could see a pullback in the short term. Regardless, the markets do seem to be reacting favorably to Chairman Powell's testimony on Capitol Hill this week that a rate cut is coming at the end of the month and is almost certain.
Did the June jobs report change your outlook for whether a reduction in interest rates is appropriate in the near term?
A straight answer to your question is no, but I will give you the context. We look at a broad range of data. So let's start abroad, where I think since the June meeting and for a period before that, the data have continued to disappoint. And that's very broad across Europe and around Asia. And that continues to weigh. And by the way, manufacturing, trade, and investment are weak all around the world. We have a box that talks about that in the monetary policy report. In the United States, we did get a job report that was positive, and that's great news. And we had some other reasonably good news. I would say the U.S. data came in about as expected. And I would also say that let's go to trade. We've agreed to begin discussions again with China. And that, while that's a constructive step, it doesn't remove the uncertainty that we see as overall weighing on the outlook. So I would say that the bottom line for me is that the uncertainties around global growth and trade continue to weigh on the outlook. In addition, inflation continues to be muted, and those things are still in place.
So based on that, the question now is, will the coming rate cuts act as an insurance policy, avoiding a recession and accompanying bear market? Or does this extend the recovery as the tax cuts have done? And that is the subject of today's big picture. You know, at the beginning of the year, Jim, you outlined three major risks to the market. One, a Fed policy mistake of raising interest rates too far. The second was a trade war, and the third, political discord between Republicans and Democrats. There is a temporary truce on the trade war front, but the Democrats are investigating, and now the Fed is talking about cutting rates rather than raising them three times, as was the case at the beginning of the year. So will a trade war truce and rate cuts be enough to actually avoid a recession?
You know, one of the things we've discussed so often here on the show is one of the common characteristics of past recessions, 11 out of the last 12, have they've all been preceded by rate-raising cycles. And one other issue, too, since 1974, every recession has seen a doubling of oil prices. Think of what happened, for example, in 2007 and 2008. In fact, the summer of 2008, we saw oil prices go to $150 a barrel. So the Fed moving preemptively, as it is now doing, removes a major risk to the economy, and the shale boom in the U.S. has put a cap on oil prices. So, Chris, those two risks have been removed from the market, which helps. But given the stimulus still left in the economy, that should be enough to avoid a recession this year, and if we get lucky, perhaps next year as well. A lot of this depends right now what happens on the trade front, which is having an impact on global economies, and I would say more so overseas than it is in the U.S., but it is impacting us here. But there are major problems brewing in Europe, which could spill over into the U.S.
Well, nevertheless, though, Jim, you're hearing more and more about a global slowdown and really recession talk here and abroad. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, and one of the reasons you've heard a lot of talk about recession probably in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and you've heard more and more news about a coming rate cut, which pretty much Chairman Powell confirmed this week in his testimony. In other words, he didn't throw any curveball. People were worried about the unemployment report last Friday coming in real strong. Maybe the Fed might change his mind. And as you played in that clip, that didn't seem to deter him. But there's a lot of talk about a recession, and it centers around the inverted yield curve, especially 3-month Treasury bills, which are at roughly 2.16%, and the 10-year Treasury note, which is roughly at 1.2. So it has been inverted, and here's the key point, for more than 30 consecutive days. Now, here's where all the talk about recession is coming from. Two regional Fed bank models, the New York Fed and the Cleveland Fed, have raised the probability of a recession to about 1 in 3. Now, here's what's got the market's attention. The New York Fed's recession indicator has risen from 29.6 the previous month to its current rating of 32.9. Now, this represents the highest reading since 2009. And why everybody's paying so much attention? The last time this indicator rose to over 30, listen to this, was June of 1990. That was followed by a recession. July of 2001, that was followed by a recession. In August of 2007, all three periods were before a recession and a bear market, and it was a tough time for credit and the stock market. So, Chris, the recent Fed models and the rise over 30 is why they put the odds now 1 out of 3 that we could be in a recession in the next 12 months.
Well, you know, as I listen to Powell's remarks, I wrote down a few things he said that I think were really noteworthy. The first thing that I wrote, and I quote, since then, and this is the June FOMC meeting he's talking about, based on incoming data and other developments, it appears that uncertainties around trade tensions and concerns about the strength of the global economy continue to weigh on the U.S. economic outlook. Inflation remains muted. And then the other thing he said that I thought was quite noteworthy, he said economic momentum appears to have slowed in some major foreign economies, and that weakness could affect the U.S. economy. Moreover, a number of government policy issues have yet to be resolved, including trade developments, the federal debt ceiling, and Brexit. And there is the risk that weak inflation will be even more persistent than we currently anticipate. So, right there, Jim, the Fed chairman mentions slowing growth, problems overseas, and the trade war as possible effects that could spill over and impact the U.S. economy. So it's clear that a rate cut is coming this month, but let's move on to the trade issue and Europe, which Greg Weldon really made a big deal about when we interviewed him. He mentioned it's a basket case, Europe, and a potential threat to our economy.
You know, for months now, we've been pointing out a couple of things that we've been seeing in the market that allude to problems. One of them has been this divergence between the bond and the stock market, and it looks like the bond market has it right. Now, treasuries don't trade in a vacuum. It just isn't falling rates here, but think about this. They're negative and falling in Europe. Rates on a 10-year German bond, Japanese bonds, and throughout much of Europe are all negative. So what does the ECB do next? It's going to have to be dramatic, as Greg talked about, as yields are already negative. In other words, when you're already at zero interest rates, in fact, negative rates, what do you do next? So it looks like we're going to see something like a helicopter drop our next, which will be bullish, in my opinion, for gold. So far, the U.S. dollar is something to keep your eyes on. The currency has gained ground over emerging market currencies, the euro, Canada, and the British pound. And right now, here's the problem. Nobody wants a strong currency right now, as Europe and Asia are much more dependent on trade and exports, let's say the U.S. economy. The dollar began to weaken earlier last month against the euro as a result of possible Fed rate cuts. But then the ECB hinted that QE or some other debasing strategy may be forthcoming as Europe looks more and more like it's headed for a recession and could be a possible financial crisis, with the ECB the only policy countermeasure.
Well, and as I mentioned, Weldon really made a big deal about Europe, and you're talking about a possible financial crisis. How would this impact the U.S.?
Well, Europe is the U.S. main trading partner. In other words, the U.S. trades more with Europe than it does any other country. And many of the Dow stocks, the Dow 30, the S&P 500 companies, get a lot of their sales from overseas and especially out of Europe. So it is going to be interesting to see, and this is coming up ahead in the next couple of weeks, what companies report when we start talking about second quarter earnings, which is coming up shortly. And more importantly, what are they going to say about the second half of the year? Because Wall Street is still predicting that earnings will rise 12% this year, a little bullish in our opinion. The problem is the Fed is going to be curbing the dollar's rise. It's going to become a problem with so many other countries are pushing easy policy and weaker currencies to stimulate their exports. It's hard to believe Right now, Greek bond yields are at 2.16. They're barely above 10-year treasuries, considering what's going on in Greece. And the problem is, with yields as high as they are in the U.S., this interest rate divergence between us and, let's say, our G10 rivals, it's challenging the view that the dollar's strength would fade, driven by Fed easing along with swelling trade deficits. That's been one of the big, I guess, propositions that have been put out by Wall Street is, hey, if the Fed starts cutting interest rates, that's going to help the dollar. That will weaken the dollar. It'll help us on trade. It'll help corporate profits because 40% of sales come from overseas. Well, what we've seen in the last week or so, especially after the ECB's meeting, that they may be considering something drastic, we've seen the dollar rally. So we could see a situation where actually both the dollar and gold both rise at the same time. And it's not like it's not happened before. But right now, the trade impact is having more of an impact, I would say, in one particular sector of the economy, or actually two, manufacturing more so than service. If we take a look at the ISM manufacturing, non-manufacturing report, the manufacturing index fell to 51.7 in June. In the month of July, it's expected to fall further, close to 50. And once you get to 50, you're roughly on the borderline between contracting or expanding. Now, if you look at the service sector, which is less impacted by global trade, it's held up much better. The ISM service sector is at 55.1. So most of the trade war is impacting manufacturing. And I would say one other sector would be farming.
The question is, do we avoid a recession and bear market at this point? Will the Fed actually be able to save us? And from the president's perspective, you know, Jim, you and I have had this discussion off the air a number of times. Will the president be able to avoid a recession and bear market before the election next November, which, as you've mentioned before, that would be curtains for his reelection chances?
You know, I think he's smart enough. I mean, he made his fortune in real estate. He knows what rising interest rates do. And, you know, he's got to see the incoming data, the manufacturing data. You know, we've talked about how steel companies are cutting back on steel production. Auto companies are laying off workers. I mean, he can't be blind to that. And he also can't be blind to the tariffs that are being imposed on U.S. agricultural goods. So I believe we were more than likely will avoid a recession this year thanks to the consumer and the service sector. But here's the issue. If a crisis erupts in Europe or trade friction persists as they are now, there's a very strong possibility of one coming in next year, which would not be good. That's why I think sooner or later, as we head into the fall and as really the presidential election cycle really kicks into full gear, I suspect that as we get closer, we're going to end up negotiating something with the Chinese, because he's smart enough to know if we're in a recession and bear market, that would end his presidency. And here's the simple fact. The only stimulus left right now for the U.S. and Europe is the central banks of both countries. Congress, at least in my opinion, is unlikely to do anything to help the president's reelection with any form of economic stimulus. They can't agree on anything right now, which leaves basically only the Fed and the ECB in Europe to ward off a recession. The problem is the Fed's interest rate cuts are losing their efficacy. I mean, the rate cuts are probably having more of an impact on the stock market than it is on the general economy, which is what you have been seeing in the stock market over this last month.
So from a short-term perspective, as Basil points out, we're likely to see a corrective period in the markets with lower highs in what he feels is a stock market uptrend that continues. But that being said, what do investors do given these prospects?
You know, I think given still these uncertainties, political discord in the trade and the impact, it is having an impact not only here, but more so overseas. I think you have to have what we call a barbell approach to investing, which means, as we've talked in a previous program, you need to have some hedges, whether it's cash, gold, bonds, to counter your position in stocks. And I also believe you should be looking at value stocks with high dividend yields, as it looks like rates are going to be coming down over the next year. Not just here, but overseas as well. You're seeing it already reflected. Bank yields are falling, and especially if the Fed cuts interest rates, that'll be a cut in the prime rate. Bond yields are falling. I mean, it's hard to believe, Chris, that last fall we were looking at almost 3.25% on 10-year treasuries. Today we're looking at 2% treasuries. So I believe, you know, in my opinion, beaten down, neglected value stocks are probably a good place to be, in my opinion, if you're invested in the market. And I also believe U.S. stocks are to be preferred over, let's say, EM markets or Europe. A lot can happen now and at the end of the year. But of the three risks I've identified at the beginning of the year, the Fed, the trade war, domestic politics, two of those three still remain. Now, the risk, and here's the good news, of a Fed policy mistake has been removed with easing and rate cuts coming this year. But here's the problem. The risk of a trade war and political discord remain, and I just don't look to see those being resolved anytime soon. Both will weigh on the markets, not only now, but till the rest of the year. So for the meantime, it appears, at least for the moment, we've dodged a bullet. But if the trade war continues to the end of the year and political discord gets worse, because we have the debt ceiling debate coming up, so there's going to be a lot of wrangling over that, that could start to take a toll on the economy. And at best, we experience a growth recession. At worst, it could become a full-blown recession, which would be not good for stocks or the president's reelection chances. But right now, lower interest rates are going to inflate the stock market, which raises another future risk of rising asset prices leading to another bubble.
So in summary, a major risk to the markets and the economy has been removed with the change in Fed policy, and this is being carried over into the stock market with rising stock prices. But the risks to the economy and the markets do remain with the Fed recession models rising to over 30, and that's something we saw before every recession going back to 1991. So a bit of caution is warranted, as our technicians have given us warning about. So, folks, do be careful. Make sure that you're not all in. Do leave some powder dry for possible lower prices. And I should mention to our listening audience that we did select our survey winners. We do want to thank you again for all the participation. We actually had the greatest response rate that we've ever had on a survey. So we do thank you for that. Jim, we've covered a lot of consequential news events affecting the markets. What do you see coming up in the weeks ahead?
Well, in the weeks ahead, we're going to be getting some more economic numbers. It's widely anticipated the ISM manufacturing number is going to be coming in closer to 50. So we're going to watch if this slowdown trend that Powell mentioned in his testimony week continues going forward. But Chris, more importantly, and this is going to be, we're now going to be talking about second quarter earnings in earnest in the next couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting to see if companies beat expectations, what they're saying about the future. And remember, it hasn't been earnings that have been driving stock prices this year. It's been more about a change in Fed policy than it is earnings. So corporate earnings, what they come in for Q2 and what companies are saying about the future. And of course, those economic numbers, if they continue to weaken, look for the Fed. They are absent August. So the next possible rate cut, if they do cut this month, the next possible rate cut will come in September. And it's really important when you look at Fed policy. Next year is an election year. And traditionally, the Fed stands on the sidelines. So this might give some credence that the Fed, if they're going to cut, they might want to get three rate cuts, which is what the futures market is pricing in right now. All of that coming up in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you and thank many of you that responded to our survey. Some great comments and suggestions, which we hope to employ in future broadcasts. But until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.